Warming up once again. We already warmed up, and we're warming up again, and this could be the start of the episode. This might as well be the start of the episode. We're warming up, folks. I gotta hype myself up when I'm starting this. Sometimes I don't know what to say, but we're saying it. I don't want to start every podcast with just Oscar guy here, blah, 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 okay, see you later, thanks, bye. I want to have some banter, and whether that banter is meaningful or not, doesn't matter. And right now, it's as meaningful as Megalopolis. Oh, he said it. anyway, Oscar guy here. How's it going, y'all? It is episode 6. Let me take my headphones off. It's gonna be too much for me to handle. Loosen it up here. It's episode 6 of the Oscar Guy Here podcast. How's it going? It's been a week. Actually, it's been 2 weeks. I took off last week because I had to get my part 2 of my October Oscar predictions out. I had to work on that. I had to record and edit that and get it pushed out before heading to the Philadelphia Film Festival this past weekend, and I did that, and I had to sacrifice a podcast episode, and it's fine, because I didn't have a whole hell of a lot to talk about anyway, aside from just my Oscar predictions, so, you know, it worked out, so, also, I put off, doing my Oscar predictions because I got sidetracked with a video game, and that is life when you're a gamer. I always got my gaming shit in my back pocket all the time. And I played through a game called Tunic again, and it's probably one of my favorite games of all time after playing through it twice. Two more times, actually, because I got the Platinum Trophy. It's an incredible game. Nobody played it because it came out the same month as Elden Ring. And it's a shame because I think Tunic is a masterpiece. So if you haven't played Tunic, do yourself a favor. Do it. Play it. But that being said, I played that, and I was getting the Platinum Trophy, and it was like, what, Tuesday or Wednesday? And I was like, oh yeah, I still need to do part 2 of my Oscar predictions. Oops. So sorry to my fan base out there who was waiting on that. But you know what? It's out now. It's published, both part 1 and 2 of my Oscar predictions for October of 2024 is now live on my YouTube channel. You can go check it out. And you can also go on oscarguyhere.com/predictions to see the predictions for yourself. And I'm already making changes to my predictions, by the way. Not on my website, but from other sources. Because things are changing by the day, folks. But in any case, my prediction videos are out there. And after I did that, I went to a little shindig. And that shindig was the Philadelphia Film Festival, which is actually still going on. And I'm actually going to be going back there tomorrow for the closing night film, which is Steve McQueen's Blitz, starring one Saoirse Ronan. And I think Harris Dickinson is in it, and I forget the main boy's name. But I've heard pretty good things about it, but I'm excited to see it regardless. Got to stay in the loop. But I'm going to be going to see that tomorrow. But what I did get a chance to see this past weekend, I saw 4 films. I didn't get to see Conclave yet. I'm probably going to hold off on that until probably next week at least. And I did not get to see the Leos Carax short. I forget what it's called. What is it called? It's not I'm Still Here. That's the Brazilian film. What is the Leos Carax film? Am I Still Here? Or Who Am I? It's Not Me. It's called It's Not Me. I didn't get a chance to see that, but I'll see it eventually. I went on Saturday. I went to a matinee showing at 12 o'clock noon of Sean Baker's Anora. And they projected it in I think 70 millimeter or 35 millimeter. I'm pretty sure it was 70 millimeter. Beautiful, beautiful projection, beautiful print. And what a hoot of a film that was. And by the way, I do have a quickie review published for Anora. It's live on my YouTube and my Instagram. I really enjoyed it. It's probably Sean Baker's best movie. Florida Project's still pretty close. But Anora has something about it. And out of all the films that I saw, and we'll get to the other films that I saw at the festival, out of all the films that I saw, I've probably thought about Anora the most after the fact, because it's a lot to take in. It's very chaotic. It's very frantic, and it kind of ends very. The ending kind of catches you off guard in a very good way. It's kind of a shocker, not really a shocker, but just like it's an emotional gut punch, as I was expecting. It really recontextualizes the film and what it's trying to say and what its messaging is. So much so is that I keep thinking about that scene and the whole film in general, and the journey that these characters took, not just Anora, but, you know, Mark Edelstein's character, you know, the young Russian kid, and the Russian and Armenian gangsters in the film, which provide a lot of slapstick humor. That was really interesting to see and experience. And it was very funny. It was hilarious. And at times, like, during its hilarious moments, it also had this undercurrent of high stress and anxiety, because I was like, these guys can do anything. Like, anything can happen. Like, this is high stakes, and the stakes just keep getting higher and higher and higher as the second act of the film progresses. And it's a hell of a time. My audience was eating up every second of it. A lot of really big laughs. But yeah, the ending is what really elevates it to another level for me. So I really want to watch it again. I'm probably going to watch it at least one more time this season. It's going to be releasing wide pretty soon, I believe. But yeah, I really loved that one. I thought it was great. Not like masterpiece territory, but really, really great. Really great. Really enjoyed that. So that was Anora. Go see it. I would like to keep talking about it, but I want you guys to experience these films for yourself, but these are just my quick thoughts, you know what I mean? So I had a little bit of a break, went and got a bite, went and got a drink, and then came back to the same theater, and ladies and gentlemen, I bared witness to a gargantuan film, if not probably the gargantuan film of the year, aside from maybe Dune Part 2. But for this season, for sure, the one film that has no comparisons to anything else in terms of scope. And that is, ladies and gentlemen, Brady Corbett's The Brutalist, starring Adrian Brody, Felicity Jones, Guy Pearce. All 3.5 hours, including the intermission. I also have a quickie review up of that, if you want to get my brief thoughts on it, but what an experience. What an incredible experience it was seeing this film on 70 millimeter and in Pennsylvania, no less. And if you know where the film takes place, spoiler alert, it takes place in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. So that hit different, for sure. That definitely elevated the experience even higher. I mean, this film is just immaculately directed, acted, constructed, shot. Technically, it's brilliant. It's Its pacing is near perfect. It's a lot. This movie is a lot in the best way. Like I said, the sheer scope of it is just gargantuan. But at the same time, it has this level of intimacy with its characters and with its storytelling. It's an enigma, this film. And it is incredible. I gave the movie a 5 out of 5. I mean, I really think it's a complete masterpiece, modern masterpiece. And there are some detractors. You know, I've actually talked to a couple people who, you know, the film is split up into, so there's an overture, first of all. I mean, you know, and then the film is split up into two parts, and there's an epilogue and an intermission between the two parts. But I've talked to some people, and I've heard some reviewers say that the second half is definitely not as strong, and in fact, some people even dislike the second half. Like, I talked to one person who just straight up hated the second half. And I disagree. I think the second half is just as good as the first. It's definitely paced differently. Maybe the technical aspects of the second half aren't as strong as the first, but I thought emotionally, I mean, stakes were just getting higher and higher as the second act progressed. So on an emotional level, it was just as effective, for sure, for me. And, you know, there was one scene in the second act where I was like, I don't know, was that really necessary? I don't know, but that isn't gonna bring my rating from a 5 to a 4.9. I can't really do that. I kind of tried doing that with Oppenheimer last year, and I was just, and I, after seeing Oppenheimer one or two more times, I was like, yeah, this is a masterpiece. So for The Brutalist, it's like the sheer weight of this film just outweighs any flaws I really have with it. Really. And I'm definitely seeing it again. There's no doubt in my mind I'm going to be seeing this again as soon as I get the chance. All 3.5 hours of it, I don't even care. Worth every single second. Amazing. Absolutely amazing movie. Absolutely amazing. Shot incredibly well. The score is very, very good. Adrien Brody's performance is just amazing, magnificent performance, as well as Guy Pearce. I mean, I haven't seen a whole lot of movies that Guy Pearce has been in, so I can't really compare his performance to anything else that I'm familiar with, but he was very good. He was more or less like the comic relief character in a strange way, even though he is the antagonist. He kind of has this, his character is very much a narcissist, and the things that he does and the things that he says, kind of, it, you can't help but laugh at how this guy acts and how this guy behaves and what his intentions are and what his intentions could be. You know, he's kind of a mystery, but you kind of start to unravel him as the film goes on. You know, similarly to Adrien Brody's character, but in a different way. But I mean, yeah, what a film, man. Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. Yeah, it really is something. I think I might have to just leave it there. What else can I say about it without, like, giving too much away? I mean, Adrien Brody has to be winning the Oscar, really. I mean, it's really him or Colman Domingo. And we have yet to see Timmy Chalamet in A Complete Unknown, but I don't see that really going all the way. I mean, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on A Complete Unknown. It could be great, or it could be kind of a dud. It could go either way, but I'm kind of leaning towards, like, the mid area for whatever reason. I don't know. And then Coleman Domingo, you know, Sing Sing and its status right now is kind of holding him back just a little bit. He could pull something off, but I think Adrian Brody has this. And he's got a great narrative too. You know, he's back after winning for The Pianist all those years back. But, oh man. Yeah, he's incredible. And Felicity Jones is wonderful too. She was nominated for Theory of Everything. She's great. I wouldn't say she's a front runner per se, but she's really great. And the rest of the cast too, you know, Guy Pearce's son, I think his name was Joe Alwyn, something like that. He was really great too. Just performances all around were amazing by the supporting cast. But especially Brody, just amazing. I think I'll leave it there. It's my favorite movie of the year so far. That one's going to be hard to beat. That one's going to be hard to beat. So yeah, I got out of that. Was reeling from that for the rest of the night, for sure. And then I went back the next day. And I went and caught another matinee at a different theater. I caught A Real Pain, directed by and starring Jesse Eisenberg and starring Kieran Culkin. One of my most anticipated of the year, for sure. After seeing the trailer, there's something about it that drew me to it. For the most part, being Kieran Culkin's buzzy performance. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought it was a really interesting discussion about generational trauma and pain, like cultural pain, because it's about these two Jewish guys who go to Poland to learn more about, you know, the Jewish experience over there during the Holocaust, and their late grandmother, who Kieran Culkin's character was very close to and is kind of still grieving that. They're both still grieving. And, you know, his character is very specific. His personality is very specific. You know, he means well. He has no filter. He's unpredictable. He's open. He's honest. He lets his emotions out, but at the same time shelters them. At the same time, like, he shelters certain emotions, and then he expresses his emotions in a different way to shelter that feeling. I don't know. It's really hard to describe. You know, he does it so beautifully. And it's hilarious. I mean, my audience was roaring at what he was doing in this film. He's funny. He's unpredictable. But there's also a deep, deep layer of sadness and tragedy behind his character as well. And, you know, Jesse Eisenberg's character is coming from a different place, too. And is very interesting. Like, has more of a structured life with a family and a stable job, and he's, you know, has OCD, and he just wants everything to work out beautifully. And then Kieran Culkin's character is kind of the opposite, where he doesn't really know what he's going to be doing with his life. He's kind of just a loose cannon, just all over the place, go, 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 just kind of not really a mess. I guess we would say a mess, but just kind of just the opposite. They're two polar opposites, but they're also inseparable. They used to be inseparable, and then they kind of went their separate ways, and they got comfortable with their own lives, or not comfortable. And then they're kind of rebonding over this experience, this shared experience, and there's a lot of discourse that goes on along the way, and it's really interesting, and it's really funny, and it's very thought-provoking, for sure. And it's good. I really enjoyed it. I might have a quickie review of that coming out pretty soon, maybe next week or something like that. I'm going to try and let the Anora and Brutalist quickie reviews kind of simmer before publishing anything new. I don't want to go like too hard in 1 week, you know what I mean? But I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed A Real Pain. I really liked it. And I think Kieran Culkin, has a good buzz around him and his performance, and his campaign is going very well so far, and he's got the charisma to drive this campaign forward, and I really think he is one of the front runners for supporting actor. Him, Guy Pearce from The Brutalist, and still Clarence Macklin from Sing Sing, I think, still has a shot as well if Sing Sing doesn't die off, which I don't... I don't know. It's Sing Sing has been performing well to people who are now finally seeing it. You know, voters are... There was an Academy screening for Sing Sing that went very, very well from what I heard. So that's good news for it. I think we're just going to have to wait and see if it'll perform at the precursors at all. And if it does, if it starts performing and it starts getting on the critics list, critics groups lists, then I think we're in the clear, unless it dies off somehow late season. But anyway, I think Clarence Macklin is still in the conversation. But Kieran Culkin, I mean, I can really see him winning supporting actor. I have him at number one now. And it really is between those three that I just mentioned right now. But that's A Real Pain. I really enjoyed it. It was great. And I did meet a very nice dude while waiting in line for A Real Pain. His name is Zach. And he is a very impressive video editor. He does have a YouTube channel. It is Zachary S. Marsh, and he edits videos for HCA, I believe, and I checked out some of his stuff, and he's a very good film editor, and I talked to him, and he's a really nice guy and very knowledgeable about films, and a really beautiful dude, so shout out to you, Zach. Hope to meet up with you again someday. But yeah, that's A Real Pain, and then I had a little bit of a break again. That day, that was this was Sunday. Not as big of a break because I think the next I kind of had to shoot over to the next movie within the hour, so I had to go back to the theater where I saw Anora and the Brutalist, and I saw Nickel Boys, Ramel Ross's feature debut. He is a initially a documentary filmmaker. And he did this adaptation of a Pulitzer Prize winning book called The Nickel Boys. And this film is just called Nickel Boys. But I went and saw this. And as I've said on, you know, past podcasts and past videos, that this is kind of more of an experimental kind of avant-garde type of film in its presentation. It's shot strictly from the point of view of the two main characters. When they're young and when they're kids, it's shot in this first person point of view. And then one of the characters, it kind of time jumps. This is not really a spoiler. I hope not, but, there's some time jumps in the film. And, one of the characters, when they're older, it's filmed from like a third person, like behind, like over the shoulder, like behind the head, point of view. Very interesting choice, directorial choice. And it works in spades. I'm gonna be honest, it kind of started out as a little gimmicky to me, and it took me a little bit to kind of get locked in to it, but once I did, I started connecting with it, and once I saw some of the really bold editing and directorial choices in the film, once the stakes get a little higher, I got more and more invested in it, and I was like, oh, okay, I see where this is going, I see what's going on here, I see what the vision is, and it's an astounding vision, and especially, like, I was really digging it for most of the film, for most of the duration, I'll say, But then the ending happened, like the last 10 minutes. Absolutely, completely floored me, the way that was put together. You can definitely tell that Ramel Ross is a very gifted documentary filmmaker because he kind of interweaves archival footage and photography into this film in a way that is so, so unique and so original, that it like almost elevated the experience of film watching to an entirely different level. I mean, there were parts of this film where I kind of had to catch myself and I was like, how can, like, these are, like, this is an experience that very few films I've ever seen. I mean, it was going beyond what narrative filmmaking can be. And, you know, Jonathan Glazer did that last year with Zone of Interest, you know, and it's very similar to this film in the fact that the subject matter is very, I don't want to say fringe, but it's deep, it's dark, it's really harrowing subject matter, that's kind of, you know, painting this portrait of, kind of a lost chapter, a lost, unfortunate chapter in American history, and it really elevates it to a way where, I mean, it's very unsettling, this movie. But it's also very moving at the same time. You know, it's a miracle that this film exists and the way it was pulled off. Masterpiece. Another masterpiece, ladies and gentlemen. Another masterpiece. I did give it a 4.8. You know, because the pacing was kind of hit or miss here and there, and, you know, it took a little bit for me to, like, kind of lock into it, like I said. But once I did, and once the ending happened, I was like, okay, this is really something. It really made me want to read the book now. And this has to be, like, it's an incredibly unique adaptation of what this novel was. And the novel is based on actual events, by the way. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I don't know if it worked for everybody. I mean, I can see some people not really understanding it and not really getting on board with it. But if you are on board, you better hold on, because it's heavy. It is a heavy film. I mean, I did hear one woman say when we were leaving the theater, and she was like, that was brutal. I was like, okay, brutal in a good way? I thought it was brutal in a good way. Brutal in the best way. Oh man. Amazing. Amazing. So I saw two masterpieces and two great movies. Anora and The Real Pain were both great. Brutalist and Nickel Boys, both masterpieces. And then Sunday, I thought about going to see Hard Truths, and I thought about going to see that Leos Carax short, but, kind of where I drove into the city that day and where my car was situated and where the theaters were laid out, I was like, I don't want to walk all that way just to, like, go see one other thing and then walk all the way back to my car and then have to drive back home. I was like, you know what? I called it early. I after the Nickel Boys, I went and got a drink. And then I went home. And that was it. That was it for this past weekend. So I think quickie reviews for both A Real Pain and Nickel Boys might be coming soon. But, yeah, The Brutalist and Nickel Boys are now my top two films of the year. In fact, let's bring up my Letterboxd. I'll let y'all know what my 2024 ranked is for right now. I just got to sign in to Letterboxd here, and don't mind my loud ass mechanical keyboard. I'm a nerd. Let's see if I go to lists. Here we go. 2024 ranked. Number 11, I have Megalopolis. I mean, that... I'm not, that's not going to be listed by the end of the year, I'll have you know, but I will be mentioning it. It's not, it's neither an honorable mention or a dishonorable mention. It's just a mention. It's just Megalopolis. It's just there. I have to acknowledge it for what it is, because what a statement that film was, man. What the hell was that? What the hell was that? But number 10, I have Problemista, which I really liked. Number 9, Kinds of Kindness. Really enjoyed that too. Number 8, A Real Pain. Number 7, Sing Sing. Number 6, Anora. Number 5, Dune Part 2. Number 4, Evil Does Not Exist. Even though that's technically a 2023 film, it was in limited release this year, and I saw it this year, so I'm counting it for this year. Great movie. Number 3 is Challengers. Still love that one. Number 2, Nickel Boys. And number 1, Brutalist. The Brutalist. So that's my ranked 2024 ranked so far. But yeah, that was the film festival, man. And like I said, it's still not, you know, still haven't packed it up yet. I'm going back tomorrow to see Blitz. And I'll let y'all know how that is by next podcast for sure. But it was a great time. It was amazing. I did meet a few people that were super nice. I sat next to a guy, I think his name was Jeff, at the Brutalist screening. And when the credits were rolling, we kind of both agreed to each other that that was a 10 out of 10 film. So I talked with him a little bit. He was very cool. Gave him a follow on Letterboxd. So shout out to you, Jeff. I think I met a couple other people too in passing. But yeah, I had an amazing time. I wish I could experience that again. I love going to film festivals. This is really my second film festival ever, because the Philly Film Festival last year was really my first film festival. And it's a lot of fun, man. I really enjoy it. Can't wait to go back. So that's that for the film festival front. We can probably get into maybe some news. There's some developments. The animated film Memoir of a Snail, which I've heard great things about. I have a couple friends at the film festival that went and saw that, and they said it was very good. Definitely a heavy, heavy film. A lot of tragedy in that one, but also has a layer of humor involved, dark humor. Claymation, I've heard great things about it. Anyway, it won Best Film at BFI, which is the London, I guess that's the London Film Festival. Yeah, BFI London Film Festival, Memoir of a Snail. Wins Best Film Award. So that's pretty big. That's really good. Let's look up some past winners of this festival. I mean, it's definitely getting nominated for animated feature. I don't know if it's going to win against The Wild Robot, but it will definitely get nominated, I think. I'll be very shocked if it doesn't. Okay, so. Oh, last year, Evil Does Not Exist won. Let's go. Year before that was Corsage, okay, with Vicky Creeps. Year before that was Hit the Road. Year before that was Another Round, okay. Year before that was Monos, never heard of it. Year before that was Joy, not the David O. Russell Joy, but a Austrian film named Joy. Okay. That's interesting though. An animated film wins best film at BFI. That's really cool. I'm really happy for them. See, Chevalier won in 2015. Certain Women won in 2016. Let's see, Loveless from Russia won 2017. Okay. Okay. We need to talk about Kevin won it. Yeah. So, yeah, I saw that and I was like, that's cool. That's cool. So that film is definitely going to be in the conversation and, you know, regarding animated feature. So, and I'm definitely going to see it at some point. I'd love to. So, in other news, they announced the placement of films being categorized in either drama or musical comedy at the Golden Globes. And I wish I could pull it up. I thought I had it pulled up, but I do not. I am not. I suck, guys. I suck. I suck. Golden Globe drama, comedy list 2024. I don't even know. Come on. Man, just give me the thing. Just give me the thing. I thought I tweeted it or something, man. Man, I thought I tweeted it or something. We're finding it. We're going to find it. We're going to find it, man. We're going to just find it. I can't believe I didn't save it. Let's see. Can we just search Twitter, man? Can you give me the rundown? Can you give me the rundown? Okay, well, while we're trying to look for this, it was announced that The Substance is going to be put in the musical comedy category instead of drama, which on one hand is great for The Substance. Oh, here we go. So that's for comedy. Okay, we might have to go to the Film Updates Twitter page here to see what's up. Okay. Let's see. That's great for The Substance because that means it's most likely going to be getting into musical and comedy. In terms of picture, in terms of actress, for both Demi Moore and Margot Qualley. So that's good for them. But there are also some people saying, The Substance and comedy? It's not really a comedy. But it's being categorized as a comedy. Because if you think about The Substance, is The Substance funny? Yes. Are there comedic elements in The Substance? Yes. Okay, it's in comedy. That's Golden Globe logic right there. Same with May December last year. Are there elements in May December that are funny? Yes, asterisk, it's in comedy. I don't know about that. I wouldn't categorize it as a comedy, even though it's funny in certain aspects. That's how they categorize them, and a lot of people are not really on board with that. But it is what it is. It just is what it is. There really is no formula. I mean, the formula is what I just explained. Are there comedic elements? Yes, no. It's more of like an if-else statement than an algorithm. I cannot find this list of drama films. No. That is International Independent Film Long List. Okay, whatever. Okay, come on. Film Updates, you gotta pull through. I can't believe I didn't tweet this or bookmark or save it or whatever. I suck. I mean, I could just off the top of my head. I mean, A Complete Unknown is in drama. It's not a musical. It's a drama about music and about musicians. So that makes sense. I cannot believe. Oh my God, I'm gonna be scrolling forever. Okay, let's just try and Google it. I mean, I got the comedy one. right here, but I can't find the... Here we go. Golden Globe. Drama. Film. Eligibility list. I don't know. Okay. Are, is Next Best Picture going to pull through? Are they going to pull through? Do they have an article about this? Do they have an article about this? Here, Golden Globe. I'm using your search feature, guys. Alright, come on. Next Best Picture, media reactions to Golden Globe. Not having luck. God, I can't believe. Okay, well, here are the comedy. Here are the musical and comedy films. That are eligible for musical and comedy at the Golden Globes. Challengers, that's another one. People were like, is that a comedy? You could put that in either drama or comedy. And again, does it have comedic elements? Yes, it's a comedy. Sure, whatever. That's good for Challengers, though, as far as its nomination chances throughout the year. That's good. Then we have Anora. Makes sense. Emilia Perez, obviously. Wicked, obviously. Joker Folie à Deux. Good luck. Hitman, A Real Pain, Night Bitch, Kinds of Kindness, interesting. Dee Dee, Saturday Night, Deadpool and Wolverine, The Fall Guy, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, A Different Man, The Wild Robot. I guess that's technically a musical. I don't know. Inside Out 2, Moana 2, Mean Girls, good luck with that. And Mufasa, The Lion King, good luck with that. The Brutalist, I guess Blitz, Conclave, any other film in contention, I believe, that wasn't listed there is going to be in drama. So Sing Sing, Conclave, Dune Part 2, Blitz, Gladiator 2, September 5th, Seed of the Sacred Fig, The Apprentice, all of these films are going to be in drama. So yeah, I mean, that makes sense. You know, The Substance, that's a choice, but it makes sense. Again, Challengers, that's a choice, makes sense. Kinds of Kindness, that's a choice, makes sense. Regarding their logic, whatever that logic is. I think Golden Globe nominations are coming. They're usually early December. They're usually early to mid-December. I'm going to guess probably towards the beginning of December for Golden Globe nominations. So I'll definitely be doing a reaction, a raw reaction for that. So that's going to be that's usually always the first reaction video of the season. So that is still about a month, month and a half away. So, but we do know where these films are going to be categorized here. So yeah, that's that. Couple other things, couple other developments. Let us pray for Hans Zimmer, I guess. Even though he'll probably get nominated for Blitz now, maybe, we'll see. But news dropped that Hans Zimmer's Dune Part 2 score has been deemed ineligible for an Oscar nomination due to the Academy's eligibility requirements for the Oscars. Very, very unfortunate because that score is unbelievably good. It apparently contains too much non-original music, quote-unquote, in the film to be deemed eligible for the Oscars. And whether that means, I think that basically just means that there's too much music in Dune Part 2 that was already used to some extent in Dune Part 1. And that's just really wacky. You know, that's just really wacky because when Oscar nominations happen and people are out of the loop, the normies, I guess you would want to call them, when Dune Part 2 isn't nominated that morning, people are going to, the internet's going to explode for a day. It's really unfortunate, but there's a silver lining, because that means that not only will the Brutalist probably be walking away with this, most likely, not 100% surefire, but it's definitely a front runner in original score now. Not only that, but Challengers. The Challenger score now has a shot to get nominated. God bless America. God bless America. Because that score rips, dude. I just turned into Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
That score rips, Mr. Gadget.
I feel bad, but, you know, also, Hans Zimmer already has how many Oscars at this point? And he won for the first Dune anyway, so it's like, it's fine. It's all gonna work out. I know it definitely deserves to be nominated, and it deserves to even win, but it is what it is. The Academy's eligibility rules for score are just kind of whack. It's like, if 10, I don't know what the ratio is, but I think it's like something like 10%. If 10% or 20% of the score is quote-unquote non-original music, then it's automatically deemed ineligible for an Oscar. But then again, how was Star Wars Rise of Skywalker nominated? How was John Williams for Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny nominated over what failed to get nominated last year in score? Oh yeah, Zone of Interest. And what else? I'm sure there are other scores that could have gotten in there. Let's pull it up. Let's pull up the spreadsheet. Pre-Oscar noms. Okay, I'm bringing up my spreadsheet from last year. I'm bringing up my spreadsheet from last year. Oh yeah, Across the Spider-Verse, bro. Spider-Man Across Spider-Verse got nominated at every precursor except the Oscars, because they got something against animated films being nominated for more than one Oscar. I swear, unbelievable. Boy and the Heron missed. Zone of Interest missed. And that's pretty much it. I mean, Elemental, Thomas Newman, that didn't get any recognition even at the precursors. That was weird. But my God, I think Across the Spider-Verse and Zone of Interest should have been nominated. Or Across the Spider-Verse or Boy and the Heron. Or the Boy and the Heron of Zone of Interest. Any combination of those three should have been nominated. But nope, let's go with American Fiction and Indiana Jones. Cool. Great. That's the Dune Part 2 score news. And again, that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Let's get that Oscar for Daniel Pemberton. Not Daniel Pemberton. Daniel Blumberg, who composed the score for The Brutalist. Or Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. I don't think they'd be able to win for the Challenger score, but a nomination would be so based. I guess in other news, Juror number 2, the latest Clint Eastwood movie that I was kind of anticipating being a surprise Oscar player. Its distribution is going to be incredibly muted, so much so that people are saying that Warner Brothers is kind of burying the film. I've come to understand that this film, Juror Number 2, was going to originally just be a streaming only film. But now they are opening it in a very limited number of theaters, and it's going to have a very short theatrical run, and then that's it. And they're not even going to announce, from what I've read and from what I've heard, they're not even going to announce the box office numbers for this film. It's like they want to pretend it doesn't exist. Why? I don't know. Maybe it's bad. Maybe it's a dud. And if it's good, or great even, or more than great, why would they be burying it? Because if it turns out to be great, then people are going to be up in arms. Because they're going to be like, what the hell, Warner Brothers? You had an Oscar contender on. It's Clint Eastwood we're talking about. 94-year-old Clint Eastwood. How does he do it? Making films. This might be his last film. And now it's just being shoved to the wayside. What's going on? Weird. Weird. Real weird. If anything, it's just kind of frustrating for my prediction chops, I guess, because, you know, I put it in my predictions. I didn't predict it for any categories, but it's underneath the line. It's like, what, number, what do I got it listed as? I mean, Toni Collette, I got her listed for supporting actor at, like, number 6. So, like, what are we doing, man? What are we doing, man? Yeah, juror number 2 is what? Oh, it's number 16. Best picture predictions for right now. Still, it's listed. It's listed. And guess what, dude? Y'all are probably going to scream at me. The Substance gang is going to scream at me. But I have Clint Eastwood for director listed at number 12. And I got Coralie Farjat at number 13. Whoopsie daisy, I'm sorry. Farjat is going up way higher next month, by the way. The Substance is... something's brewing for the Substance. I'm feeling it. I'm feeling something for the Substance. The Demi Moore campaign is really going hard. Some people are even trying to campaign Margaret Qualley, but especially the Substance, the film, and the directorial achievement by Coralie Farjat. People are really trying to campaign this film, and there's a lot of people talking about it. But this is film Twitter we're talking about, mostly. That doesn't 100% correlate to what eventually becomes an Oscar campaign, and I don't really know what Oscar voters will make of this film. And I know it showed to Academy members, and it seemed to have gone well. I mean, I think there were some walkouts, but I don't know. I think I'm having it in the back. If there's one film that could surprise us all, it could be The Substance. It could be Gladiator 2, which I've heard great things about. Or maybe it could still be September 5th. You know, some people are saying that that's still an awards player. Others are saying that it's a dud. I don't really fall anywhere because I haven't seen the film. I haven't heard enough about it to make my own opinion of that. But that could be a surprise player. But out of every movie that we should be keeping a closer eye on, it's definitely The Substance. So, but anyway, juror number 2, it might be dead. Juror number 2, dead. So... we'll see how it does. We'll see what the reception is. And and we'll go from there, I guess. We'll go from there, I guess. Moana 2, I have listed here. They submitted 2 songs for Moana 2 for Best Original Song. They submitted Beyond, and they submitted a song called Can I Get a Chi-Hu? So there's that. Zach, who I mentioned I met standing in line for Real Pain, he told me that Moana 2, he thought Moana 2, I don't know how true this is, it's probably true, Moana 2 was originally going to be a TV series, and then they turned it into a feature-length film. So I was like, okay, well that's not too great. In any case, and how good Moana 2 is critically, it's going to make a shit ton of money, bro. It's going to make so much money. It might make as much money as Inside Out 2. I'm just saying. It's gonna make a lot of money. There's a lot of kids out there and a lot of families out there that are super into Moana. Ask my brother and his family. My niece and nephew love Moana, bro. It's going to make a killing. I'm sure it's going to make a killing, despite how good or how bad it is. So I'm keeping an eye on that for a possible nomination. But I don't know. I don't know where that's going to go. But and just, can I get a Chi-Hu? Like, how good can that song be, you know? Is that the new Hakuna Matata or something? I don't know. I don't know. We'll see with Moana 2. Speaking of animated feature, there's also a Looney Tunes movie called The Day the Earth Blew Up that is coming out, and I've heard good things regarding those test screenings. Let me see. The Day the Earth Blew Up, a Looney Tunes movie. Yeah, it's coming out this year, I think. Yeah, it comes out... Oh, no, wait, it comes out February 28th next year. So I don't know if that's going to... That's pretty tight for an Oscars campaign. That's pretty tight. I don't know if that's going to happen. But I heard through the grapevine that it might be really good, that it might be really solid. So I don't know. Just want to throw that out there. Maybe I'll add that to my list. But, you know, judging by that release date, I'm second guessing that. I don't know. I think I'll leave it there. I think I'll leave it there, folks. Coming up on an hour here coming up. Everything's coming up roses. This time it's almost an hour. Okay. That's it for me, y'all. If you haven't seen my predictions videos yet for October 2024, go check it out. It's part one and part two, covering the above-the-line categories and the below-the-line categories, respectively. Go check it out on my YouTube channel, and also go to OscarGuyHere.com. Check out the website in general, but also check out my predictions if you just want to look at my predictions for the month so far. Follow me on Instagram at OscarGuyHere. Follow me on Letterboxd, JazzMusic131. Follow me on Twitter, OscarGuyHere. I don't use Twitter as much as I should, but I should start using it more. But I'm there. And if you haven't subscribed to my YouTube channel, I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you're doing, bro. Unbelievable. I still love you, but unbelievable. Go subscribe. More content coming soon, i.e. a Real Pain quickie review, i.e. Nickel Boys review, i.e. Blitz review, maybe. And yeah, stay tuned for more content after that, even as we get the season ramped up a little bit. So yeah, thanks guys for watching. I appreciate you guys for listening all the way through. And I will see you guys next time. I'll catch you on the flip. God bless. Have a good one. And Oscar Guy is...